Can you talk a little bit about the executive orders today and what has led up to this?
The executive order today has been a major blow in the battle to protect water for all peoples. But I think what led up to it is nothing recently. I mean, it's been a cumulative energy that's flowing for years and years and years. It's a battle between good and evil, if you will, and a battle between those who are out to destroy the universe and those who are out to protect the universe. And that battle has been an ongoing battle, since the invasion of the country. Their native people have stood firmly for years and years to protect environment and homelands, and gradually over a century and a half of continued oppression, we've lost significant parts of our homeland and have been reduced down to a real insignificant portion of the land base. So we hold firmly on what we have, and the powers to be, the Trump administration this time has sought to take away what little we have left.
Given the history of the federal government's unethical treatment of the native people that you were just speaking about, does the Trump administration compare to any former administrations in relation to native people and environmental impact?
Well, first I would say indigenous peoples with an S, and that makes it's a really big difference. So when you have the S on peoples, it's a human rights matter. And until 2010 in the United States, indigenous peoples did not have human rights until they recognized the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So I would encourage everyone to always use peoples. People is singular, and then we don't have rights, and we're not recognized in the international arena, or even in the national arena, as having rights.
Thank you very much for making clarification
It's
on
part of
that.
the work that we do, so I gotta do that. So do they compare? I think it'll be just about as horrible as it's always been. I think we see it, and it'll be more revealed. And sometimes things that have impacted Indigenous peoples, all the things that have impacted Indigenous peoples, Native peoples here south of the Medicine Line, Native peoples north of the Medicine Line in Canada, all of this whole North America and Mexico as well, have been negatively impacted by any colonial government. Every colonial government is going to be bad for Native peoples, for Indigenous peoples everywhere. So we can say, is he going to be as bad as Abraham Lincoln, who hung the Mankato 38? Is he going to be as bad as Jackson and the Trail of Tears? These are the same battles. Is it going to be as Obama, whom we had so much hope in, and who, under his leadership, we have DAPL, we have renditions, we have all kinds of things that we should not have had that have impacted Indigenous peoples, North and South. So yeah, it's going to be bad, but is he worse? Maybe. Different? Somewhat. Is he part of the same settled colonial government, the same colonizing system? Is he part of the same process that has oppressed our peoples for centuries and centuries and centuries? Yeah, he's the Frankenstein let loose. And he's hungry. He's new. He's fresh. I don't know if he's going to be that different. I think we hate him more. It's easier to hate him. He's easy to not like. But is he going to be better or worse for our people? I'm not so sure. No. Just a million things on Standing Rock and how to save the world. How to turn off the sound, though. Yeah, it's.
What is the medicine line?
What is it, the 49th? Yeah, 49th parallel. So the medicine line is what divides so-called Canada with so-called the United States.
Okay.
And the history is that when our people from south of the medicine line would be chased, right, by cavalry. At a certain point on that, they got far enough away, the cavalry would stop and not chase them anymore. They could get into Canada, so-called Canada. Same difference for those who are north of that line. If our brothers and sisters there were running from being killed, they could run south. And the Royal Mounted Police or whomever, they would stop. And so our people of that time would say, that's the medicine line. There must be medicine there, protecting our people. It's the medicine line. So we're south of the medicine line. They're north of the medicine line.
Okay. That makes sense. Unfortunate sense, but it makes sense. What would a good government do?
Yeah, well, I think good governments would look at how to develop a prosperous in indigenous communities of Native peoples, you know, and in doing that would look at the atrocities that they've inflicted on us in the past, primarily the stealing of land and resources. We're on a small area of land in the state of California and in the nation, and we're expected to prosper when non-Native peoples, federal government, has the majority, 98% of the land. Of course we can't survive, you know, on the small portion of land. I think a good government would look at that and say, here are the 19 treaties that were not ratified in California that make up a huge portion of land in California. This is indigenous land. We're going to give it back to you. We're going to give it to you. You know, we stole it. There's no indication in looking at the history book that would indicate otherwise than a stolen land. People are living on stolen land. There's no rhyme or reason to believe that they own it. And indigenous peoples believe that we still have a relationship to the land base, that there is a homeland, there is an area that we have that has historically been under our possession or control, if you will, our management responsibility, and we took care of it, and it took care of us, and we were prosperous for thousands and thousands of years. So a good government would say, I admit to that. I mean, we can't talk reconciliation without some consideration of how do we make this a just, non-racist oriented country and say, hey, it was a racist act to steal the land.
It was a very racist and very selfish act.
Yeah.
And
it's racist to hold it. Mm-hmm. It's not just the taking.
Yeah.
It's the hundreds of years of holding it and being righteous about it. And justifying it and creating a whole system of legislation and other acts and other acts of occupation and settlerism that persist to dig their claws in deeper. That's racist. They're holding on to stolen property and they know we know they took it. And that's where we are.
And getting them to admit that and to
and then
respect.
You know, really in anything, then the real action is the right action. An apology, I don't want an apology. The real thing is to actually do something, the return of the land. I don't want to hear an apology. I want to see action, return of the land. Don't divert the water. Don't kill every living thing on the face of this planet. Don't empower corporations to violate absolutely every possible right of every human being and every living thing. Money. There is no example of a good government that we've had here. So to inform them now would be a full dismantling of the government as it is now and have to be re-envisioned to something that has to be, is going to benefit and provide prosperity for everybody, not what Chris is referring to, which is now the impoverishment of almost everybody. They're impoverishing not only Native peoples, but all peoples are being impoverished. By virtue of kind of starving everybody, of the
and getting everybody into debt,
yeah,
and then distracting us with Super Bowl or whatever else tantalizes people with the sparkle of the moment. Works. It really works.
Well, the Romans did that back in the day with the.
It's the same thing. The same thing.
How can non-Native people who aren't involved with the government help with this?
All people are involved with the government. No one's not involved with the government. People vote, people pay taxes, people participate all the time. Everyone's participating in each our own way and at different levels. It would be, if you really want to make a big change, would be to get really involved and say, okay, this is what's going to have to happen. If you really want to think that's where change is going to happen. In the alternative, I would say trying to find a way to really participate in the resistance against corporate takeover of the universe, participate in the resistance of violating every possible treaty that's ever existed, whether it's been ratified by Congress or not, to participate in the resistance of the continuing, like feeding that voracious monster that's gobbling us all up, and the commodification of water, the privatization of lands, the pipelines. A lot of the allies that came there are standing really serious ground and taking some really serious blows. And those that are in alliance and fighting in accordance to how the indigenous peoples there are taking the leadership, and I really, I'm probably saying that a little bit backwards, but it was one thing to go over there and say, well, I'm going to go to Standing Rock and I'm going to take a picture out there on Facebook Hill and all that, but it's something else altogether to say, I'm going to go support treaty rights, water rights, and I'm going to be working with indigenous peoples, and I'm going to take their lead in terms of what their people say on their treaty lands they need. That's a whole different kind of alliance that we really, really need.
How can people educate themselves on the treaties?
I think people are well educated. You know, that's the irony of the whole situation. We're not a nation of stupid people. They understand what the situation is. Whether or not they choose to do something about it is rest within them. You know, I think they already have enough knowledge and enough just plain common sense to realize what they're benefiting from, what they're participating in is wrong. You know, and I don't know how else to phrase that. Folks know right and wrong, the basic principles of right and wrong, and they choose to do the wrong thing all the time because they don't want to change the status quo. They don't want to change their lifestyles. They don't want to change how their kids are being raised and their status in this society. You know, because what we're talking about is something that will turn the apple cart upside down. Totally upside down.
You know, that can be scary for a lot of people.
And people don't want to do that. But yet we know as we inch closer and closer to the disaster that people have perpetrated on themselves with climate change, it's going to happen. There's going to reach a time when there is that choice is no longer possible. We can't consciously and intellectually make a choice to change what we're doing because it's going to be too late. That force will take over. The force of nature will take over and cause the destruction. Then people will be forced to change. And I hope we're not reluctant, you know, apathetic enough to wait that long.
I hope we aren't either. What is the next step? What are, in regards to the Dakota Access Pipeline and the recent executive order that just happened earlier today, what is the next step that the Sioux and that you all at Seventh Generation Fund will be doing?
You know, we have historically, under many different administrations over the 40 years of our existence, we supported resistance, you know, and we supported a thinking that will bring about change in the world. And hopefully we have been successful at that. So I think the next step is continued resistance. Certainly our effort here is trying to raise more money to continue the resistance. It's going to get harder. But resistance is the only way we can begin to change. And we're not talking necessarily about DAPL. We're not talking about the North Dakota pipeline. We're talking about pipelines across the Klamath. We're talking about Kinder Morgan pipeline in British Columbia. We're talking about major, major atrocities that are planned and being perpetrated now in indigenous communities and in on the world.
So you are worried that this decision will also affect the pipeline. It's called the LPG pipeline in the Klamath watershed.
I mean, and pipelines, you know what? If pipelines were bringing clean and fresh water to Flint, if pipelines were doing those kinds of things, we would have a whole different conversation here. But that is not why... they're putting pipelines in. And quite frankly, and to quote a beloved brother. We don't need any more pipelines. We need to operate on the ones that exist and then dismantle that and go to alternative energies and to become sustainable. That's what we need. We don't need to be building more pipelines.
You know, ever since I was a young child, they've been talking about how oil is not a sustainable resource.
This is the last hurrah for oil. And any monster that mean, it's not going to go down easy. And it remains hungry. And the only way it can feed itself is on the lands, lives, and cultures of indigenous peoples and everything else around. So this is holding on. So like Chris is saying, resistance and resilience. We work with communities that are in resistance and are resilient and have survived for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we plan to survive. But it's going to be a fight, and it's not going to be pretty.
So if people want to contribute to Seventh Generation Fund, you do have a donate button there on your website. Is there any other way that they can contribute?
Well, certainly that's probably the best way to, you know, contribute. But give us a call, 707-825-7640. But also there's a lot of other initiatives happening that are really positive, and they need to find out where they are and what's moving and what's happening, making some responsible decisions in their own livelihoods, you know, is the best support.
Are you trying to move off of oil yourself?
Yeah, moving off of oil, and it's not just oil. It's all the different ways that we have to make good decisions for any aspect of our life, all aspects of our life. And like Chris was saying, every day we have to have an opportunity to make a decision. Every day we have an opportunity to make the right decision. And we do know there's this prevailing perception, particularly in sort of liberal America, that, oh, I'm ignorant, that's why, or people are ignorant, that's why they're racist. No, people know exactly what they're doing and exactly why they're doing it. There is no ignorance, actually. That's a cop-out. People know why and how they think what they do. And I think coming to terms with that and really looking in the mirror and really admitting that will be a really good first step. It's hard. But from that will come growth and learning. And only then can we really have a real conversation about what's really happening in this world.
Lindsay had wanted to know what your feelings on Trump's proposed Secretary of Interior, ex-Navy SEAL commander, and Montana's freshman representative, Ryan Zinke, is.
Well, probably no different than others. You know, I think with Native peoples, you know, the relationship with the Indian Reorganization Act governments, the tribal governments that we have now, they have certainly provided some good leadership in terms of cultural activities, but in terms of preserving and and understanding what it takes to sustain a tribal philosophy and spiritual belief system, it's not the tribal governments. You know, it's always the traditional community. And traditional communities have survived under any administration and will continue to. We survived the gold rush, you know, and the atrocities that we were reduced 90% of our population and we sustained ourselves and survived.
90% in the gold rush?
Definitely.
I didn't know that. That's horrifying.
Among the most decimated peoples in so-called United States or Northern California, indigenous peoples, like they say, by the time they got here, they were really crazy. And people were sold right out here. Body parts were sold right here on the Arcata Plaza. Thousands of women and children were trafficked with extractive industrial development, just like mining, gold mining, just like timber harvesting, just like what they're doing to the water. That's all extractive. Well, that always comes hand in hand with extraction of women and children and the trafficking of indigenous peoples, always around the world. It happens now. It happens along any pipeline. The man camps and the trafficking of women and children is entwined with any extractive industrial development, specifically pipelines. It happens here in the United States. It happens in every country of the world where corporations are allowed to feed upon us and feed upon the land. What happens to the land happens to the people. We are indicator species and it'll happen here. It happened during the gold rush where thousands of people were butchered and hunted. It's happening now. That's available to in news, and it's silenced at the same time, as if it's in some faraway country or some remote place that it could never happen here in the United States, but it happens here today and now. So it happened, and the link of that history, the enduring link that hasn't subsided. So when we start our conversation around like, how is he different or all these different things, it's really just the same legacy for us. So it's like, okay, so it's a new phase, new guy, monster, maybe a little bit worse, but you know what? Not a whole lot different. If we really look at how many different administrations, different presidents, and all the buttressing systems that are really manipulating everything, and really what they've been doing for you know what, 200 years, same. It's all the same. Just another one you got to brace yourself for and face. Maybe a little differently. Maybe a little different tactic. Maybe talk a little different. Maybe a little bit more abrasive. But it's really all the same.
I thought for a second when the Army Corps of Engineers had made their decision that maybe some things would have been changing just
well,
a little bit.
It's a brief victory, but like in any long time battle or war, it's a brief victory, one little battle. So yeah, that was definitely a success. That was a triumph. But it didn't win anything. It didn't stop anything. We were there in Standing Rock that day and for days afterwards. And I'd been there before. So that's a brief victory, but it doesn't resolve anything. It just stopped that easement for a brief. They still had all their lights. They were still doing work until they restore the land, until they remove the equipment, until they stop pulling people over, until they stop riding over them in snowmobiles, until they stop following you in cars on your way back and forth to Bismarck, until they stop walking around in their riot gear, until they stop like launching their dogs, mace, rubber-tipped bullets, not rubber, not like little rubber toys, or rubber-tipped bullets that cause real damage. Until they stop, you know, weaponizing the very thing that we're protecting, nothing has changed. It's still a war. Nothing has changed. So a piece of paper and the fact that the permit wasn't allowed for the easement, that's great. I mean, that's definitely a victory. But nothing changed. They didn't pull one car out of there.
And apparently they finished the rest of the pipeline and all they have left is underneath the river there.
Just a little bit. A little bit. And even that weekend, they said, when they made that announcement, they, you know, the other word was like, and Apple says, so what? We'll pay the fines. We're going to keep digging. You know, well, because they can afford it. Plus, they knew they only had a few more weeks until Trump was in. So it's just like, they're just going to dig in too. So we're all just digging in and facing off. Some are really well armed and really backed up. Some hire mercenaries. And some are on the other side. And that's where we are.
And they didn't do anything until the veterans were thinking about coming out there.
That was when the veterans were there. We were there when the veterans were there. That was that same weekend. Yeah. They were scared of them. That's all.
And the big question is, in this one real isolated situation, would it be different if Hillary Clinton were elected president? Chances are not. You know, if Obama took the position or refused to take a position, I doubt very seriously if Clinton would have taken any stronger position with regard to DAPL. You know, the support for and the financing that the oil companies bring to government is outrageous. And, you know, I wouldn't see significant changes or significant differences no matter who was elected.
It's so weird because they say their argument is that it creates more jobs, but actually rerouting the pipeline would create more jobs.
We wouldn't be in support of rerouting the pipeline. We're not in support of any pipeline being built, so we can't get behind that at all. Although I recognize maybe there'd be more jobs. You know, either way, we're still talking about construction jobs, creating a pipeline that's going to destroy the world. It's going to destroy someone's water. And you know what? There's only one water. Just because you move it over a few yards, it doesn't mean it doesn't impact water. And water is all connected. It's all rivers, all oceans, all clouds, all rain, all tears, all blood. It's all of us. So moving it over doesn't help anybody.
It should be stopped.
Period. That's it. That's the only option. No pipeline. That pumps oil. Fracked oil. There's no way we could ever welcome moving it over a couple inches or a couple hundred miles, moving it anywhere. We are against any pipelines connected to the oil industry being built anywhere.
So you're also going to fight the Keystone pipeline?
You know, historically we would be involved with environmental issues, environmental organizations would ignore us until there was no other alternative less. Then they look for the Indian card, what's out there that Indians have. Well, right now, we're the only, we have the only ace in the hole. We have indigenous rights, we have treaty rights, we have a relationship to the land, we have a philosophy, a spirituality that is first and primary in all of this struggle, this land struggle issue. And folks are finally beginning to realize and understand that it's not the last card in the deck, it should be the first card in the deck. You know, and you know, to be quite honest, it's the only trump that can out-trump the Trump.
I like that. It's
you're
awesome.
Pretty good when you got a cold, baby.
Yeah, you're not bad at all for having a cold right now. And just looking over, I feel like we've had a really good conversation so far, and I just don't want to.
I'm sure it's nothing what we had imagined the conversation would go, but we're just
going. It never is. It never really. I didn't know I'd be sitting here whenever I got up this morning at 7 this morning.
I appreciate you coming because it has been such a busy day, as you even saw on my messaging there. It can't even get away. We even had to bring sandwiches in because we couldn't get out of the office. So, you know, just. There's some long days ahead.
Well, thank you very much for sharing a lot of your perspective with everybody else. More people need to hear this.
We'll see. We'll see. You know, I would agree with Chris. I think people know.
But sometimes they need to hear someone else in order to spur change within themselves.
Yeah.
Because that can be hard.
It can be hard. It can be really hard. And we do need to come on in a place of more equity, and we do need to come in a place where it's earlier part of the conversation. So we really do appreciate you coming, you know. We are the last ones to be considered, and we were the first impacted on almost everything. And we're going to continue to move forward. Hopefully this will help set something in motion where Indigenous peoples are going to be part of the conversation early on and part of the organizing and decision-making of collective conversations that are going to impact all of our lives, as opposed to be the call on Friday night because something's happening on Saturday morning.
Well, that's the way that it should be, is that you should be part of the organization, one of the first ones.
Yeah, it should be like that. Yeah. We'll never push ourselves, rarely we'll push ourselves into that. We'll just do our own thing. And that's sort of how that works.
Well, after years and centuries of being pushed out, you kind of unfortunately forced to do your own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was looking up, and there's already been a lot of environmental impacts the oil industry has had in North Dakota. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there was a spill just a while ago. Yeah. Kind of close to Fort Berthold, I guess, or something. But anyway, there's a spill. I think when we were out there, one of the times we were out there. Yeah. Pipelines spill. Pipelines burst all the time. And the oil industry is knowingly decrepit in its ability to maintain its materials, its machinery. I mean, it's built for extraction and violence. It has to break.
Well, 176,000 gallons of oil spilled in Western Dakota last month alone. And that's from the Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration. That's a lot.
And that's what we know about.
It's just crazy. It's so bad.
And it doesn't even touch on species impact, cultural impacts, historic impacts, or any other kinds of impacts. I mean, that's just sort of some of the basics of just that. It doesn't even touch on the other stuff. So huge impacts of that kind of industry. They don't care.
And it's not even just that. If you just look at the way that it impacts everything else, too, it's crazy.
Central and South America has been devastated by the oil industry and will continue to be devastated. And the American public doesn't even
know about it.
Don't want to know about it even. You know, there's been major efforts to bring some awareness.
Well, so many people with the Trump administration, they just want to, or just anything political, a lot of times they just want to turn it off and be like, no. But that's not the, really bad things happen if you don't pay attention.
Well, like Chris is saying, that's a choice. So people can inform themselves, and it's their responsibility to inform themselves and take appropriate action on that information. they can bury their head in the sand, and you can get killed that way just as easily as you can get killed by where you're looking at the bullet coming towards you. So either stand up and do something about it, or bury your head in the sand. There's no space in between. So, you know, we would rather take responsibility for what our actions are and what our lives are based on what we know, and do something. Make some informed decisions. And we're just not going to run and hide. I don't think we would be here after 500 years of oppression and violence if our people ran and hide. We're here because our people were adaptable, resilient, and we learned how to survive based on the information at hand. That means we did not bare our heads. We had to take action. We had to, or else we wouldn't even be here. So we can't turn our backs on what they did, our ancestors, and say to our future generations, you know, well, we just kind of closed the curtains and said later, you know, no way. We have a responsibility to our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, our great-great-grandchildren to do the right thing now. So hopefully they have a cup of water, clean water, in generations to come.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, that's really scary. It's really scary. That's why we're all doing what we're doing. And not just for that cup of water for our great-great-grandchildren. It's like every bird has something. Every bear has something. Every tree has something. That there are trees and bears and birds. We have to do something.
And our logo, Be a Good Ancestor, the t-shirt T.S. wearing, is that's what we're taking a position on. Everybody has the responsibility to be a good ancestor and making sure they make the right decisions for their future generations. And that's just the anthropocentric concept. That's a human concept. You know, the broader concept of being a good ancestor to all of life, you know, is also very important. You know, we do have the ability, we do have the understanding to make those decisions, and we need to do that. We need to make some real firm decisions in life.
So can you reiterate again, just one more time, just for the end, what individual people can do to help?
Individual people can stop being individual people and start thinking collectively and acting collectively. It's a lot easier to go hide your head in the sand as an individual and say, well, I don't want something to touch me. But really, if you understand yourself as a continuum of multiple generations, people and places and everything in the universe that made you into being, and all the things that you're going to put into the next generations to come, then you're not an individual. You're part of a huge phenomenal motion of connected energy. When we realize that, we realize our responsibilities are of relations, that Mother Earth is not a resource, she's a relation. That the water is not a resource, it's a relation. When we see it that way and we de-individualize ourselves and connect to everything, is probably one of the first most proactive steps that anyone can make to become part of the resistance and the resilience at the same time.
You know, I think we are a part of this World Water One initiative that we're organizing now to be able to bring out some of the atrocities happening in the world to water. This event is scheduled for March 25th at the Blue Lake Rancheria, and we're reaching out to partners. Certainly support for that initiative is extremely important so that we can bring some awareness here in Humboldt County, but also extend our reach through the internet to the world, to bring in the world to Humboldt County through internet. So those actions at Standing Rock have a voice here. Those actions in Mexico and in Ecuador and other places in Canada can have a voice here so that people can understand them a little better.
What is that event again on the 25th?
It's called World Water One. It's the first initiative that we're putting together to bring awareness around the importance of water.
You said that's March 25th at Blue Lake Casino.
March 25th, Blue Lake Casino. And March 22nd is World Water Day, International World Water Day. And being a Wednesday, we thought it would be more effective locally and provide for more participation to do something on the weekend. So we're coordinating with a number of partners, including Blue Lake Rancheria, for March 25th. And we'll be able to share that information soon as we begin to plan more.
Okay, thank you very much. And we should do something for World Water Day.
Yeah.
You should come on again.
Yeah, we might have some. We might be able to bring some people over from different locations. We're not sure yet who's all going to be able to join us, and that might be a good program.
Yes, I think that would be wonderful to do something for World Water Day. I'm open to any idea.
Great, sounds good.
Is there anything else you want to add today?
That's about it.
Okay.